Welcome one and all. This is Rocka from the Deader Dudes. It's been a while, it's been a minute, and it is the festive holiday season, so I want to wish you all a happy holiday. In the spirit of the holiday, a special release in the United States of a Japanese movie has graced us with, I would say, old-fashioned movie making at its finest, and maybe giving everybody a little reprieve from heavy CGI, multiverse-type extravaganzas. Yes, the superhero genre. But it's giving us monsters. And yes, well, I'm not talking about any other movie except Godzilla Minus One. Yes, in the title of this podcast and YouTube video on the Deader Dudes page everywhere, I have titled it, is it the best Godzilla movie ever? Is it one of the best movies of 2023? Which there are kind of slim pickings. But in any case, just like classical movies, classical books, classical pieces of art, if it's timeless and it's universal, it's a hit. It may even be called a masterpiece. Which, my humble opinion, this is a masterpiece in the monster universe. Okay, let's get to it right away. No, it is not the greatest Godzilla movie ever. It is the greatest modern Godzilla movie ever. You cannot replace the original. Because without the original, there is no lineage. The original Godzilla franchise, people, hold on to your seats, is 70 years old. The longest running franchise ever. And there's a reason why the original, with all its flaws, everybody said it's too dark, it's grainy. Sometimes the model sets, they look like toys. Okay, it's 1954, people. For that time period, for that age, for the artistic point of view that Godzilla is, not a prehistoric monster brought back to life in some Frankenstein being. No, it is one of the first ever climate change movies. It's one of the first ever what the F are we doing to this planet movies. Yes, it's born out of the nuclear age and the two atomic bombs dropped in Japan, and then the arms race thereafter and the Cold War and everything else. It also serves as a, I would say, somewhat cathartic and empathetic, I guess, coming to grips with aftermath of World War II. You know, it is very hard for the losers of the most horrific war on the planet to come to grips with how do you move on, knowing there's not just survivor guilt, there is huge guilt of the atrocities they have committed. And I am not making an apology for this crap. I'm not. You know, especially myself being a Filipino-American, we were greatly affected. Me personally, my family line has taken deaths, murders, committed atrocities. We were inflicted upon atrocities of Imperial Japan. And I need to specify that because we're not pointing out different people and then the grandkids and what they did. No. It is what it is, and it was Imperial Japan. As you can see through the movie, there's a humanistic side to everything. Okay? And I'm going to just warn everybody right now, yes, I've decided to lay heavy, but not completely all spoilers. There are some spoilers here, and there's some revelations that I will speak about that it's impossible to even call it a spoiler. It's part of the plot line. So regardless, if you have not seen this movie yet, and I'm going to slowly get to some of the spoilers, but I do highly recommend it. And we'll get to all that in a bit. The main focus here that I like to highlight is that it is truly a humanistic drama that shares the spotlight with Godzilla. I don't think Godzilla is a character that moves along the plot. I mean, I think Godzilla is the character and it is the plot. But hand in hand with this main character, who is entangled in a, I mean, a very empathetic role. Okay, he is a soldier in the Imperial Japanese Army. He is a pilot. Not only is he a pilot, this is getting towards the later stages of World War II, where Japan was inevitably looking, staring at defeat. So he's a kamikaze pilot. And this ties into the title. People wondered about the title. It may have, I don't know if it's lost translation or it's just something odd, Godzilla Minus One, but it's first and foremost, post-World War II, Japan was at its zero, devastated, nothing. If you throw in, or when you throw in, the Godzilla factor, it becomes minus one. So you have to understand in those terms. It's basically saying less than zero. I guess if that was more of an Americanized retitling, but it is what it is. That's their title. PBJ, who watched the movie with me, our affiliate in Deader Dudes, our third Deader Dudes, had also mentioned to me that sometimes when in the military, forces go out, not everybody comes back. He was a kamikaze pilot. His mission was to go out and engage in a suicide crash. He came back. He was scared to do it. He didn't want to die. Especially staring at the inevitable loss. It's almost useless to die when you are staring at defeat. And beyond that, I really believe that no matter what happens, even if they were going to win the war or they had a chance, he did not want to die as a suicide pilot. Totally can understand that from a humanistic point of view. Now, what happens in the beginning of the movie is that he lands in Odo Island. Odo Island is like a mechanic and refueling station for pilots. They did not expect a pilot to return. And it's intimated that he had mechanical problems, and that's why he landed. And the mechanics overlooked his plane up and down and found nothing wrong. So they knew why he came back. So he's alone in his thoughts. He's shamed. You are still a soldier. No matter how horrible the orders are, he disobeyed the orders. But later that night, a creature comes aboard, ashore from the waters, and it is Godzilla. It is Godzilla like neither anyone has ever seen before. Think about a glorified T-Rex coming from the water, maybe an amphibious or bi-amphibious creature in a very rudimentary Godzilla form, even less than the original 1954 Godzilla. And this creature stomps about, and he has a second chance to save his soldiers instead of committing his instead of accomplishing his kamikaze mission. He was asked by the engineers who are shitting bricks, shoot this thing. You have the big gun. Do some damage. Kill it. And he freezes up. So for the second time in his military career, he does not execute his role. And nine or so mechanics die, and one head mechanic is severely and permanently injured, a leg injury, and amongst other things. And he really gives it to him. But this engineer has no. He's not a killer. He's not going to kill this pilot, Shikishima. Instead, he hands him the photos of the families of the dead engineers. Kind of like stick it to him. Live with this guilt, brother. So, the main character heads back to Japan. He's ashamed twice. He can't even look at these photos. The guilt is too much. He goes back to his home and it is reduced to rubble by the air raids, by the nuclear bomb, by the war. His parents are dead. His neighbor blames him for not doing his job, shames him for being a coward. And she had lost her two young kids and blames it on him. So he's got blame, he's got shame, he's got guilt, he's got post-traumatic syndrome, which is also addressed in this movie. And yes, it does happen in every war. Yes, it does happen all the way back in Roman times, Egyptian times, Sumerian times, ancient China times, no matter what. It is not addressed then, but it is addressed now, which is fantastic. And this poor pilot is at wit's end. I mean, he is... I don't know if he's suicidal, but he is mentally unstable and completely depressed. And I mean, just beside himself. He runs into a woman. Everybody's poor, broke. A woman is accused of stealing something, whatever. The woman has a baby, hands the baby to him. And then now he's taking care of this baby and he's running around and later meets up with the woman. And the woman, it's not even the mother. The woman lost her whole family. This is an abandoned child that she took. And now he has. So in a kind of escape mode from his reality and from his pain and his emotional baggage, he takes on, in his rundown, destroyed home, this strange woman, this abandoned orphan child, and he makes the best of it. Ironically speaking, to make ends meet and to provide with his new unorthodox family, he takes a job as a minesweep. During the war, mines were laid all over the waters and somebody has to go and clean them up. They're magnetic and any metal ships go out there and immediately they're blown to smithereens. So he's on this rinky-dink wooden boat, steamboat, I guess, and that's how they're capturing these mines. And it pays well. He provides for his new family. He's got a purpose. He feels, I guess, a little bit in repentance of his crimes. And he's adjusting. He's pivoting. But he's never really resolved his guilt. That runs throughout the course of the entire movie. And it runs and drives his pivotal action at the end of the movie. Spoiler. His actions to play the hero in a pivotal role to take down Godzilla. You know, the government's in shambles. The Cold War is addressed. The U.S. does not aid. They do not send any troops because they're fearful of the Russian response of their huge military deployment in the area. Godzilla has come upon land. There is an iconic scene with the train, which they reimagined and they repurposed and they tied into the plot line of the main characters. It is fantastic. The Godzilla itself morphs. You know, there's this in the beginning scene I mentioned, he looks like a glorified T-Rex. There's a cutscene to the Bikini Atoll Islands that were the basis of nuclear testing. So it goes full circle to the original Godzilla, where the force of nature of this beast is now augmented by man's brashness and our unabashed need to destroy all things. So Godzilla becomes irradiated, atomicized, or whatever, I just made a new word. And it leads to my other point. Oh my goodness, the atomic breath scene is probably one of the best, if not the best, of all the Godzilla universe. It's not a concentrated ray. It's not a huge glorified flamethrower. It's like this blue, white, hot, jagged nuclear blast with a buildup. His spikes move up and down from tail to head, and they kind of crank up and get blue until it unleashes into this. I mean, if the gates of hell had a hole in it, it came right through and incinerates everything in its path. There is a fantastic mid-movie scene where Godzilla attacks the minesweep and boats in the open water. The drama, the build-up, the execution is fantastic. It's Jaw-like. It makes Jaws look like Accident at the Petting Zoo. And of course, the director did say they had inspiration from Jaws as well. You could see it all over the place. So you have these water battle scenes that you haven't seen before. They have the land scenes, the evolution of Godzilla, the de-evolution of this main character, or his strife to reconcile with his past. You have the supporting role of, I guess, his roommate. They're not really married. There's a thing there. There's so much tension, but they never really get it on. I think they're heading in that direction. There's a lot of tension in that sense, and by good measure, because nobody is the same after this war. Civilians and veterans alike, you know, it's devastation and everybody's trying to deal with it. And then, hey, throw in a 164-foot Godzilla monster, which the producers and showrunners have said is the same height as the original Godzilla. Now, it is nothing less than a masterpiece to tie in a very humanistic story of post-traumatic World War II with the perfect foil, Godzilla, who is, I think, acting as the human truth, the human ugly truth, that no matter what we do to each other, we don't hold a candle to human nature or acts of God, quote unquote. And evil as it can be, Godzilla is still just being Godzilla. You know, a lion in the open wild is being a lion. It's doing what it's meant to be. But it is reacting against mankind because of what we've done to nature. And here it's the atomic age. All in all, the balancing act of Godzilla and the human, you know, the main vein story, it is a masterpiece because everything ties neatly. If I ever were to give any kind of criticism, and this is a huge spoiler, so I'm just going to reel it back now and lay it on you. If you stayed with me this long, I so appreciate it, but I have to get to it, and I'll try to spare the details so that don't ruin everything for it. It's a fantastic movie. The ending, for me, had a touch of sellout. I understand why it's done. I see why it's done. I see the logic in it. I just wish it wasn't so. I wish they went another route, but they didn't, and I guess everybody has to be happily ever after. However, there is already talk of a sequel because of the resounding success. And what do I mean by success? Of course, dollars and cents, people. A $15 million budget. Let me say it one more time. A $15 million budget has turned into, well over 300 plus million or something like that profit worldwide. It's gotten a ton of critical acclaim, and this is a Godzilla horror sci-fi movie. Okay, so either that's an editorial of the movies that are out now, most of which stink, or it is what it is, which is a masterful good movie, you know, with 164 pound radiated beast. All right. So with that said, I think I'll wrap it up here. And I want everybody to know that, yes, I give it a 9 out of 10. It is a fantastic movie. It adds to the lineage of Godzilla, and oh my goodness, if you haven't watched it, please watch it. Yes, it's subtitled, it's not dubbed. I think there's some beauty in that if you can take the patience to watch it. It's a quality flick. It's a quality flick. It does justice to a lot of really bad movies in the monster line. It kind of points its finger indirectly back to Hollywood, going, can be done with a less budget and with good writing. Eyebrow raised. Okay. Again, music's great. It harkens back to the original Roar, the original orchestra music, the hype. You'll get all nostalgia in it. Please watch it, enjoy it. Let us know how you feel. You disagree with me, you agree with me. You've been awesome, and thanks for everything. Hope this is a good holiday season for everybody. This is Rocker from the Dead Air Dudes signing off. Dead Air Dudes loves you, and happy holidays. Remember to always, always save the whales.